Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Most of us have a generalized knowledge of who to call if you're injured due to negligent action of or inaction of someone else, say another driver, and would seek out an attorney who practices personal injury. Perhaps less known is what to do if you suffer an injury at work. In a personal injury case, it's all about who is at fault. But in most instances, personal injury law does not apply to an injury suffered at work. There is a system in place to protect workers, but it's not dependent on the same factors as would apply to a personal injury case. Tonight, the basics of the workers' compensation system. What happens if you are at fault? What if you want to see your own doctor? What if the injury is permanent? What if you can't return to work for a while? Or if you can't return, period? If you work for someone, this is the information you need, and we're prepared to give it to you. And as always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Our phone number here is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking about workers' compensation. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation, but bear in mind that our guest can't give you precise legal or medical advice. We're getting kind of close tonight. Can't give precise legal or medical advice. We're not going to have all the facts relating to your case, but we're happy to pass along the legal principles to assist in your decision-making. And as always, while their guidance mightn't be the positions of their respective employers or clients, my guests are here to help and to inform. Joining us tonight, a sought-after speaker who routinely addresses attorneys, physicians, unions, and consumer groups about workers' compensation and the law in California. With offices in San Rafael and San Francisco, workers' compensation attorney Robert Wyman served on the Board of Governors of the California Applicants Association, a group that advocates for the rights of injured California workers. Bob is certified by the Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, as a specialist in workers' compensation law. And Bob, you've been a great friend of this program, both the broadcast and the Call a Lawyer feature that we're hoping to bring back later this year. I'd like to welcome you back to Your Legal Rights.
Well, thanks, Jeff. It's good to see you. It's been a long time.
You know, before we go any further, you know, I'd like to start with a question, but remembering tonight we're only talking about the big picture. We just don't have time to cover it all in an hour. But I'd like to start with a basic question, the view from 30,000 feet. What is workers' compensation?
Yeah, and this is a topic that could take up the entire hour, but I promise I'm only going to take a minute or two. You know, over 100 years ago, if you got injured at work, it was, as you described earlier, it was a personal injury lawsuit. You sued somebody. And that had all sorts of perils because you'd have to prove fault. You have to prove that the accident was the fault of your employer. And like with the personal injury lawsuit, there's no benefits right away. It could take years before there's a judgment or a settlement, and the worker would be left with nothing in the interim. So the workers' compensation systems were set up all around the country around the same time to provide a no-fault system to provide benefits to people who are injured at work. And there was a big pushback from the employer community saying, why should we pay for something that's not our fault? And the response was, well, we're giving you a system that can help you plan. You'll buy insurance, and we, the legislators of the various states, will decide what the benefits are. So it's a system that's designed to get benefits quickly to injured workers, regardless of who's at fault.
So does workers' compensation cover one-time injuries?
Yeah, it basically, it covers two types of injuries. We have specific injuries where you trip and fall at work and twist your knee or break an ankle. But it also covers repetitive injuries or illnesses. Carpal tunnel syndrome from years of typing, or just a worn-out back from years of lifting, or bad elbows from years of swinging a hammer, and illnesses that can develop over time. The illness doesn't have to be completely caused by work, but if it's aggravated by work, it's covered under the system, and those we call cumulative injuries. So the person who's diabetic and has foot troubles, that's a non-industrial condition, diabetes. But if their job requires them to be on their feet all day, to climb phone poles or walk on uneven ground, work can worsen that condition, and then it becomes a work injury.
And that was going to be my next question. So I guess we can say that workers' compensation does cover injuries that develop over time, such as repetitive motion injuries or the like.
And I've never done the math on this, but I probably see more of those than specific injuries, because frequently someone will lift up something and hurt their back. But the reality is that's not the cause of the injury. It's 20 years of lifting heavy items, and it's just on that particular day is the day their back gives out. And so a doctor would probably consider that to be a cumulative injury. It generally doesn't affect the benefits, whether it's specific or cumulative. There's times I want it to be one or the other, but generally the benefits are going to be the same regardless of the cause.
You know, we've been talking in terms of physical injuries, but what if somebody suffers a breakdown or stress or some other mental health condition as a result of their work? The public defender who leaves on stress or the like, is that covered by workers' comp?
Oh, absolutely. And you just reminded me of a district attorney that I represented who filed a stress claim because in the olden days, the bad guys left the district attorneys alone, and she ended up with a stress claim because they basically put a hit out on her. They were going to threaten to kill her, and that was covered under workers' comp for psychological injury. The legislature, under the pressure from employers, made it a lot harder. They made it harder, not a lot harder. They made it harder. There's more hoops to jump through to get a psychological claim in, but we do it all the time. And in fact, we now have presumptions for police officers, for example, that if they suffer stress on the job, it is presumed to be industrial. So it's quite easy to get benefits. And employers have become more enlightened. It used to be a sign of shame to admit a psychological injury. Many employers now step up and accept these claims, get people treatment so they can get back to work.
Does it matter if the employee's been told that he or she is going to be losing their job, or are they still covered?
Once someone is injured at work and they're in the workers' compensation system, their employment status doesn't matter in the sense that their claim will continue. So whether it's because the business shut down, the claim continues. If they're laid off, the claim continues. Now, there are laws we have penalties. They're not the best, but there are penalties that we can seek if someone is discriminated against because they filed a work injury. They're difficult to prove, but in our electronic age, you'd be surprised how many times I get an inadvertent email saying, we're going to punish Joan because she's a third person injured this week. And that's illegal. And they'll have to pay a fine and pay additional benefits if they discriminate because someone's had a work injury.
Seems to me I remember a case from quite some time ago, it was close to 30 years, where an employee went to her boss, knew that they were about to terminate her, and before the boss said a word, she knew she had been called into a meeting, and she said, "Before you say a word, I'm going on disability." Is it always a race who talks first? Is that really going to be dispositive?
It can be, because another attempt by the employers to cut back on workers' compensation benefits, and we've been battling employers on these issues for forever, there's a thing called the post-termination defense. So if someone is terminated, they cannot later claim a workers' compensation claim. However, there are a ton of exceptions to that rule, and we can usually drive right through it. So for example, if the employer has notice that the injured worker had possibly an injury before they're terminated, then that post-termination exception does not apply. If the worker, for example, someone gets fired and then they say next week, well, by the way, my back's been killing me, I want to file a claim. If they've seen a doctor before the termination, and they don't even have to say it's work-related, they just say, my back's really been bothering me lately, then that defense doesn't apply and I can get their claim in. So there's a lot of exceptions to that post-termination rule. But it's why it's really – and I just had a trial on that recently. We won, proved that the employer did not go through the right steps, and we prevailed. But boy, if my client had just said the moment his back hurt, hey, my back hurts, would have been a lot easier for me. But he did go to a doctor. He went and saw a doctor before his termination. I found that right. He never mentioned it to his employer until after they terminated him, but I found that doctor's note saying my back is killing me, and we prevailed.
So his back is killing him. What benefits might be available for something like that?
Everything I've been doing, and workers' compensation is the only job I've had since I've been out of law school, and I backed into it, but I loved it, so I stayed. Everything I do boils down to three benefits: medical treatment, temporary disability, and permanent disability. And I'll quickly go through each one. So medical treatment seems obvious. You get to see a doctor at no cost for your work injury. Temporary disability, I don't like the word wage loss because we don't have wage loss. We have temporary disability, which is a smaller benefit. It's two-thirds of a worker's gross weekly wage. And there's a cost of living increase every year, so I always have to stop and look at the book to see what the current amount is. But we're up to about $1,600 a week as the maximum, and it's tax-free. So it's only two-thirds of one's wages, but it is tax-free. So that helps even that out a little bit. And for any one injury, a worker can collect up to 2 years of temporary disability. And they also have available to them state disability through EDD. So EDD does unemployment, but they also do disability. And if a workers' compensation claim is denied, or if there's just a dispute about temporary disability, or the injured worker has used up their 2 years of temporary disability, they can go to state disability, and there's another year of benefits available to them there. So that's benefit two. And benefit three is permanent disability, which shouldn't be confused with total disability or the inability to work. Permanent disability just means someone's had an injury that hasn't healed completely. They still have some symptoms. Or there's certain conditions just by virtue of having had a knee replacement, for example, you're going to get some disability. And then the doctor can provide a higher disability rating if maybe the knee isn't functioning as well as it should. But there's some carpal tunnel. Just by virtue of having had carpal tunnel surgery, you pretty much get some permanent disability. And what that is the doctor gives the patient a percentage. You're 5% disabled. You're 10% disabled. There's a little formula that we run it through, and then you get money for that. So you can have permanent disability and return to work. I am the proud recipient of a permanent disability award for my shoulder. I never missed a day of work because I work behind a desk. If I'd been working for UPS, I probably would have been off for 6 months or so. So those are the three benefits: medical treatment, temporary disability, and permanent disability.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Joining me tonight is San Rafael and San Francisco workers' compensation applicants attorney and certified specialist Rob Wyman. Tonight we're talking about workers' compensation, really what it means from on high. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking workers' compensation law. You don't have to jump in where we are in the conversation. You know, I was talking to somebody today who was asking about whether workers' comp would apply to him, even though he doesn't work for anybody and he doesn't have any employees. But to what extent? And I did stumble onto something. Is the law changing to where in certain occupations or professions, you have to take out workers' comp even if you have no employees?
Owners of businesses are not covered by workers' compensation unless they get they can go apply for a policy if they want. So they're excluded. They don't have to buy a workers' compensation insurance policy for themselves. But if they want to, it is available to owners of businesses. There's a special rider that goes on there that says that they're covering the owner of the business as well as the employees. Now, for an owner, if you have employees, you have to have workers' compensation coverage. It's required by law. You either have to be self-insured, which some large corporations go the self-insured route. But for most small employers, they buy a policy of workers' compensation, and that's mandatory. It's a felony not to have it.
And I read something about contracting businesses that are going to be required to have it, even if they have no employees.
That's still an area that's been an area that's been in dispute for my entire career. We used to see it with the taxi drivers. They were all considered independent contractors, and therefore they were excluded from workers' compensation. But the courts eventually found that you can call yourself an independent contractor, and the taxi company can call the drivers independent contractors, but what they're doing really looks more like regular employment. So we're going to argue that we're going to rule that they're covered under workers' compensation law. So we do get a lot of contract employees, quote, independent contractors, covered under workers' compensation. Now, the difference would be I'm a plumber and I go to various people's houses to fix their pipes. I'm an independent contractor. I'm not covered under workers' compensation. But if I'm hired by Google as, quote, I shouldn't say Google, but any big company, I'm hired by some big company as an independent contractor to do all their plumbing work, the courts are going to say that looks more like regular employment to us, regardless of what your pay contract is. And we're going to say that worker should be covered under the workers' compensation laws. The state wants people to be covered. They don't want people out there having injuries that have no resources to help them get back to work. So the decisions tend to be fairly liberal in terms of finding employment.
I see we have a caller in queue on line one. Welcome to your legal rights.
Professions, you have to take out workers' comp even if you have no employees.
Owners of businesses are not.
I'm sorry, we're getting a lot of feedback from your radio. Can you turn your radio down?
Can you hear me okay?
Now we hear you.
I'm so terribly sorry. Hi, I'm Rachel. Am I on the air?
You're on the air, Rachel. Welcome to your legal rights.
Well, yeah, I'm going to pull over. Hi, I'm a psychotherapist practicing in San Francisco. I want to thank you for what you're offering. It's incredibly, incredibly helpful. So because I'm a psychotherapist, I never actually get to be the human being filling out the form when someone needs to go on disability for a psychological injury. That's always their MD as a psychotherapist. I'm not a psychiatrist. What I'm concerned about is at the point where a person's job needs some extra proof, some type of supplemental insurance, etc., I then get very heavy into paperwork, which I actually enjoy because I really want to help my patients out. Why is it we seem to have a really hard time with psychological injury? There's a term called global access of functioning. My clients could have suffered tremendously, but no matter how much suffering, if they're getting out of bed, it seems, I have no chance of proving that they deserve supplemental financial support. Shall I take my answer off the air?
Whatever you'd like. As I mentioned earlier, it is harder to get psychological claims accepted as industrial, but it's not impossible. I do them all the time. And what typically happens is most psychological claims are denied by the insurance company, which means the injured worker has to go to an independent evaluating doctor to determine, does this meet the criteria for workers' compensation? Right. But we get past that hurdle most of the time. And I won't get into the technical aspects of it, but there's some rules like you have to have worked at an employer for 6 months before you can file a psychological claim, unless it's a catastrophic injury, then the 6 months. There's a lot of little technical rules we don't have time to go into tonight. But any licensed psychologist has a PhD or an MD psychiatrist can write a report for workers' compensation. But also allowed in to support that claim are the MFTs and other therapists that don't have the doctorate, but their opinions are still considered, and their charts and their notes and are
yes.
often very useful. But to get a claim accepted, at some point it has to be a PhD psychologist or an MD psychiatrist who writes the report that says, yes, this should be considered industrial. And one area that has changed, and this is different for psychological injuries than it is for physical injuries, a physical injury only has to be slightly work-related. A psychological injury, work must be the predominant cause. It has to be 50% plus. And that's the type of thing that the psychologist, psychiatrist has to comment on. And they're the only ones that can comment on that and say, yes, I think in this case, sure, this injured worker had personal stressors in their life. Who doesn't? But work was the predominant cause of their need for treatment and need for perhaps disability time right now. Does that answer your question, or is there something else?
It's a perfect answer. Here's where it gets tricky. I treat physicians, and they are asked to do the unthinkable. Their jobs are tremendously stressful, and they're also not allowed to admit to having psychological vulnerabilities. So it's probably a much longer conversation, but it's an area where I'm tremendously interested. When they describe some of the experiences they have, for instance, in ERs, it's unthinkable. It's tremendously stressful. But I think the tough thing is often people will say, well, they signed up for it. So, yeah, you've been so helpful. If there's anything to that, I'd love it.
Well, we're seeing change. And
right.
In my 30 years, I did represent one physician who had a stress claim. And it was accepted as industrial. And I can see where it's one of those professions where physicians don't want to admit that they need help. But we see the
right.
same thing with firefighters and police officers. They would never want to admit to a psychological injury. And it usually meant the end of their career.
Mm.
And we're much more enlightened than we used to be. And I'm seeing a lot of police officers who are immediately offered treatment by their departments. They're off for a few months, they get intensive therapy, they go to retreats, and they're able to come back to work. So the stigma isn't there like it used to be when I started. I've never seen a police officer or firefighter file a psychological claim. But it's changing, and hopefully it'll change for the physicians too, because I can guarantee you, if an emergency doctor comes to me and says, I am burned out and I'm stressed,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get that case accepted as industrial. Or 911 dispatchers, incredibly stressful job.
That's right.
And we get those claims accepted.
Thank you for the work that you do.
Oh, yeah. I love doing it, and thank you for saying that.
Thanks.
Hey.
Have a wonderful night.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And let me turn next to Jacob in Santa Clara. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, how you doing?
Much better, hey. Thanks.
It is my understanding that back in 2019, that it was Arnold Schwarzenegger who changed the workman's comp law. Okay, I have had such a difficult time during those 2019 and 2020 to get my case, you know, taken. And I have a great lawyer, and he was able to get me in and taken care of. I have repetitive motion on my thumbs, and I've had 6 surgeries. Now, is Arnold to blame for all this? But at the same time...
Oh, no. We can go back to Pete Wilson, George Dickmason, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Gray Davis, Jerry Brown. They have all damaged the workers' compensation system equally.
You know, Rob and I were talking about this last night, and care to take a guess, Jacob, who was the last governor to sponsor changes to workers' compensation that were friendly to applicants?
I have no idea. I understand that there's a lot of people that were taking false claims, and I understand that, but there are...
I want to address that right now. First of all, in answer to our quiz, it was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan gave us job retraining, and it was a brilliant, good program, and every governor since then has chipped away at it to where it's now an almost useless benefit. But as far as fraud, the employers went out and hired a well-known think tank to study workers' compensation fraud, and they found that the classic idea of fraud, the person faking their injury, the person who's out skiing when they're supposed to be home nursing their bad knee, that those cases are exceedingly rare, and that the greatest loss of income to this system is employers who don't report all of their employees, because their premiums are based on how many employees they have. And they lie about how many employees they have. They lie about the payroll. They pay less into the system. And that costs the system way more than the occasional person who does cheat the system. I mean, it's extraordinarily rare. The benefits aren't great. Most people want to go back to work. They want to get a paycheck. They don't want to be on disability. And yes, one of the changes that was made was a limit on temporary disability. So I've had clients that have had catastrophic injuries, and they might be on temporary disability for 4 or 5 years. It's now limited to 2 years. So I don't even remember which governor. That was a series of governors who chipped back on the temporary disability. So
I'm working full time still, even though I am in a different position, because I used to be a press operator, but I was brought back because of my skills to teach people.
And we do see the good employers. That you brought up a good topic. So when someone has a work injury, they get a level of disability, and the doctor will frequently assign restrictions, and someone may not be able to return to their usual and customary job. It is the employer's responsibility to try and find reasonable accommodations for that person, whether it's modifying the job they have or finding them an alternate job in their company. Now, that actually falls outside of workers' compensation. That's where an employment lawyer comes in to argue under the ADA laws, which is federal, under state fair employment laws, that this employer didn't provide modified work, that there was modified or alternate work available, and they didn't provide it. So frequently I'll refer clients out to an employment attorney to handle that in the civil courts. But again, more of our larger employers are becoming more enlightened, and they do want to try and find alternate work, and it makes them a better corporate citizen. They can say, you know, we find work for our disabled employees, and we can keep them on.
So yeah, I got a great attorney in North San Jose.
Excellent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. So one last question before we go to a station ID, which is coming, but for my medical benefits, can I go to my regular doctor, or do I have to go to somebody special?
You have to go to somebody special. I mean, what generally happens is someone gets hurt at work. I mean, most injuries I don't see. We're talking about a mild sprain, a laceration, something that requires a couple of stitches, pulling a foreign sliver out of an eyeball or something like that. The employer is going to send that worker to their workers' comp clinic. But if it's something more than that, the worker can immediately request a different doctor, and they should, because these clinics are great if that's all you have, a couple stitches and you're on and you're good to go. But if it's anything more serious than that, the worker absolutely has a right to get their own doctor. However, most of the time it has to be a doctor that's within a network set up by the employer or their insurance company. And some of the networks are better than others, and that's an area where a good workers' comp attorney can help someone find a good doctor. Now, workers can pre-designate and fill out a form. They just have to go to HR and say, I'd like to pre-designate a doctor in case I have a work injury. But it does have to be a doctor that the worker has seen before. Way back when, we would tell people, hey, if you, just pre-designate Dr. Smith. She's great. Can't do that anymore. It has to be a doctor that you've already seen. And you have to pre-designate them before the injury, and then you're allowed to see that doctor.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. And we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Sitting here with me is a good friend of this program for many, many years, Rob Wyman. We're talking tonight about workers' compensation law. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on workers' compensation law. You don't have to jump where we may be in our conversation. And in our conversation, let me ask a question. If I miss time from work due to an injury there, can I get paid for the time? Or does this come from my sick leave?
One does not have to take sick leave with a work injury. Now, this could be a topic for a full hour program, so I'll try and go through it quickly. But the basic benefit is temporary disability. Now, when someone has an injury at work, the employer has 90 days to decide if they're going to accept or deny the injury. During that time, they do have to provide some treatment. And if they accept the treatment, then it continues. And if the doctor says they can't work and the injury's been accepted as industrial, they do get a temporary disability check. That's the benefit I was talking about. That's two-thirds of your wage up to about $1,600 a week is the maximum. Now, frequently claims are denied or delayed. And that's when state disability comes in. That becomes crucial. It doesn't come in handy. It's crucial. So if someone has a serious injury, I encourage them to apply for state disability right away because they may not be getting that temporary disability check for a while. The insurance company might deny the claim. Then there's medical evaluations. That whole process can take 6 months, 9 months to get a claim accepted as industrial. In the meantime, state disability will pay. Now, an injured worker can use their own sick time if they want, which is nice. They get full pay. Now, here's where it gets a little interesting. I've had some clients say, well, gee, I used a few weeks of my vacation time before they accepted my claim. Can I get that vacation time back? They can, but they got to sort of pay for it because they're getting a full salary with vacation. And if they ask the employer, well, can you switch this over to temporary disability? The employer will say, sure, but you owe us some money back because the temporary disability check is going to be lower than the full paycheck. So for those situations where it's only been a week or two and hopefully they have a lot of vacation stored, I tell them, just use your vacation pay. You got full pay for those couple weeks instead of the two-thirds. But they shouldn't have to use their sick pay. Now, if they've run out of all benefits, they've run out of temporary disability, they've run through their state disability, and they have money in they have time in their sick account, certainly they can use it.
So if I have to go to the doctor due to a work-related injury, but I do go to the doctor on my own time.
Yeah.
Does my employer still have to pay?
No. This is a little gap in the system that has always been there. Employers do not have to provide time off to go see the doctor for treatment. If it's a medical legal evaluation, they have to pay a day's temporary disability and give the worker the day off. But when it just comes to treatment, you've got to do it on your own time. And that can be very difficult for someone who works a classic 9-to-5 schedule. It's very hard to get to the doctor. They have to sneak out or go on their lunch break. For my clients who luckily work a later schedule or an earlier schedule, they can go see the doctor before or after work. But it's never been mandatory for employers to give workers time off to get their treatment.
And then if I go get treatment on my own time, does that excuse the employer from having to pay for the treatment?
Oh, no. I mean, this could be an accepted claim where the workers' compensation carrier is paying for the treatment. So they're going to their workers' compensation doctor. They're getting their treatment. But they've got to do it on their own time. Or they've got to have a very friendly employer. And many employers are. A friendly employer that will say, fine, you can take a little extra time at lunch to go see your doctor. But otherwise, workers have to go on their own time, even though it's being paid for by the workers' compensation carrier.
What if I'm only part-time or maybe a temp? Am I covered?
Temp's covered. Part-time's covered. The worker's likely to get a smaller temporary disability check because, again, it's based on wages. But, yes, I represent a woman now who works one day a week at a big retailer. Her temporary disability check's pretty small because she only works one day a week, but she's getting all the rest of the benefits. And, again, independent contractors, that's a case-by-case situation where we can prove that this employment looks – this particular person's work that they're doing looks more like classic employment than independent contractor status. And we take those – I take on those cases and we look at them on a case-by-case basis to see can we – does this look more like true employment that will cover them? Even though the contract says they're an independent contractor or workers' compensation judge can say, no, this looks more like employment to me. You have to cover them. You have to pay for their workers' compensation claim.
So it sounds like the closer it is to somebody that comes in once in a blue moon and it's not really employment, maybe they have similar stuff going on the side. They've got a dozen or so people they service. That's probably not going to be covered.
That's probably independent. The like I said, the plumber that you call out to your house is an independent contractor. But the plumber who goes to – well, the plumber goes to work for a large corporation and works there every day as a plumber, likely to be considered an employee. And another test – and there's a lot to this, Jeff, so it's something that we can't cover in great detail tonight. But if the work one is doing is basically aligned with what the employer does – they're also more likely to be seen as an employee rather than independent contractor. So the computer programmer who's doing the exact same work for one big tech company, they're on an independent contractor contract, but they're doing the exact same work as the employee that's sitting two desks away from them. We've got a good chance of getting them to be considered an employee. But again, the plumber who just comes out to the corporation on one occasion to fix a broken pipe is probably going to be seen as an independent contractor and not covered by the business where they're fixing the pipe. It's not going to be considered their employer.
And, of course, it gets a lot more complicated. When he shows up at a homeowner, it's probably a one-off.
Yeah,
but
these are the most complicated cases.
And then as you start finding out, he gets that call from that same dispatcher day after day after day. It's probably somebody's employee.
But if someone is an independent contractor, if you're listening out there and you're an independent contractor and you think, oh, I can't get covered by workers' compensation, call a workers' compensation attorney. Call a certified specialist and they'll tell you, yeah, you'll get a free consultation. They'll tell you, yeah, this looks like employment. I think we can work with this. Or I'll tell someone straight up, now your situation is a classic independent contractor status. And in that case, they can go to state disability to get paid for the time off work, and they can use their own health insurance for that injury, but they probably won't be covered under workers' comp. But a good workers' comp attorney can pretty quickly say, this is closer to employment, this is closer to independent contractor, let's talk some more. Let's see if we can get you in under workers' comp.
Let me turn it over to Stan from South San Francisco. Welcome to your Legal Rights.
Yeah, how you doing there?
Hey, we're good.
So I got a question. I got a couple of gigs that I'm working. One is as a fitness consultant, and I went ahead and dropped a 25-pound dumbbell on my foot. It bounced off of one knee and then landed on my foot. That was not fun. And then I also have some arthritis in my hands, and it's precluding me from doing that. And then... I also work in IT. That's my primary, but because my arthritis is getting bad, it's hard for me to bang on the keyboard all the time. What's the deal on workman's comp for either one of those? And I'm self-employed, so you know that's kind of important there.
If you're self-employed, the general rule is you're not covered under workers' compensation. But as we discussed earlier, there's a lot of exceptions. If you're, quote, self-employed, but you're working at the same gym and they say, hey, we want you to see this person today, and tomorrow we've got this person lined up for you, and the next day we've got this person lined up for you, you might be considered, not for tax purposes and not for other purposes, but for workers' compensation, you might be considered an employee. And on your IT gig, if the injury you had doing the training is aggravated by that other job, that can be a separate work injury against that entity, again, if you're considered an employee of that entity. Now, you might be an independent contractor there as well.
Yes.
But it's worth talking to, and we just wouldn't have time tonight because this would be an hour conversation I would have with a client that comes in the office about their job duties and where they work and who pays them and how are they paid. These are all the factors that go into whether or not someone's an employer, an independent contractor. But you can call any certified specialist. You can call this the Bar Association, the local Bar Associations, or call their lawyer referral program. And a workers' comp attorney will all the good ones in the Bay Area will spend a good amount of time with you to evaluate that situation, see whether they think you're covered under workers' compensation. And we get a lot of people covered, so it's worth the call.
Is there a fee for that, or is that does that come out of the benefits?
We are not allowed to charge for an initial consultation. So anyone can see a workers' compensation attorney. They're not going to pay a nickel. Now, if we sign up the client, we do get a 15% fee out of typically their settlement at the end of the claim. But that consultation is always free, and there's zero obligation to hire the attorney.
Does that vary by state?
Yes.
Or is that it does? Okay.
Workers' compensation is covered by the states. The federal government doesn't get involved at all, so every state has a slightly different. They're all they're fairly similar in the big picture, but the technical rules are different in every state.
Okay, good deal. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Stan, thanks for joining us in Your Legal Rights. So let's get a little more controversial. For example, I want to make a claim. I want to be covered by workers' comp, but I'm not a citizen.
Oh, immigration status, citizenship, irrelevant. And undocumented workers are absolutely covered under the workers' compensation system. And employers can actually get into trouble if they try to use someone's citizenship status as a bar to them getting benefits. Case law on that has been solid for decades, that if you're working in the state of California, regardless of your status, you're covered under California workers' compensation. You know, I remember when San Francisco Airport was having that big expansion, we had workers from all over the world, all over the country, coming into California to work at that airport job. They're all covered under California workers' compensation because if you're physically working in California, you're covered.
You know, my boss says, well, you know, buck up. The injury was your fault. Is he really off the hook, or could he even fire me for being injury prone?
I mean, employers can fire someone. I'll try and make this very vague so I don't give away the identity of anyone. But, you know, I've represented clients that maybe were on their fifth car accident in their job, and an employer can't terminate an employee for that if they've been a careless driver. But they can't terminate them just because they've had a work injury.
It almost sounds like a separate consideration. I mean, if they're getting involved in car accidents, there's also the question of at some point that employer is going to be liable for the other person this guy hits.
And that's why
so it's a little different. But if he's dropping a bowling ball on his foot and, you know,
covered.
It's a third
he's
time.
He's covered. Even if it's the third time, he's covered. And for an employer to state, hey, just go, and this happens all the time in the construction industry, here's my company credit card, go see this chiropractor, he'll take good care of you, let's keep it off the books, let's keep it off workers' compensation. That's a felony for an employer to try to do that. And it happens all the time. As soon as an employee says, I think I'm hurt, the employer is required to give them what we call a claim form. The employer may want to dispute the injury. They may call up their insurance company and say, I think this is bogus. But they must give that injured worker a claim form. The injured worker fills out. It's sent to the insurance company. And then the insurance company can evaluate whether or not the claim should be accepted as industrial. And if an employer fails to give a worker that claim form, the claim may be automatically picked up as industrial, even without a doctor's report, just by failure to provide them with that information.
Now, something you said perked my attention right away when you said this happens all the time. It's a felony. Where is the felony committed? Is it denying the worker the chance to go through the system?
Correct.
Or so you have to give the client the claim form. You have to give him the information and the opportunity to pursue it. But if you want to say, look, if you take care of it outside the system, I've got a doctor that'll fix you up and it won't cost anything. That's
illegal.
That's illegal.
And it's
too.
A felony.
So,
and it never gets prosecuted. I started my career representing employers, and occasionally something like that would happen, and I would sit down with the employer and say, you could get yourself into big trouble here. It is against the law to make a false statement or encourage someone not to file a claim, and that's why you bought insurance. You bought insurance so you don't have to worry about this. If someone says they're injured, just turn it over to your insurance company, turn it over to the adjusting agency, let them handle it. Because you don't want to get yourself in trouble by saying the wrong thing and discouraging someone from pursuing their rights.
But I'm an employee, and what do I do if my claim's denied? I mean, the insurance company, maybe they just don't want to spend the money. So they say, hey, you know, we're not buying it.
Claims are denied for factual reasons and medical reasons, and it's almost always medical reasons. My wrists hurt. I want to see a doctor. And the employee said, well, we don't know that our job necessarily is the reason that your wrists hurt. So we want you to go see an independent medical evaluator. And that doctor will determine, yes, this person types 60 hours a week and their wrists hurt. I think that's a work injury. There can be factual disputes as well. Was the employee actually at work when they had the injury? They're out running an errand. If it's a work-related errand, they're covered. And if it's a combination of work and personal, they're covered. So employee says, I'm leaving for lunch, and the boss says, can you pick up a carton of milk for the coffee room? Sure. And the person gets injured. They're likely going to be covered because they're on a part personal but part work mission.
What if the person, the boss, says to you, hey, you know, I hate to ask you this, I have a huge favor, but would you go to the cleaners and pick up my shirts? I'm just not going to get there before they close. But you're doing it for the boss.
Yeah, then that's got to be a work injury if they get injured on the way to the cleaners.
So what's the difference? I mean, can you succinctly tell us the difference between workers' comp and disability and personal injury?
Well, personal injury, again, it's you've got to prove fault. You have to prove that the employer caused the accident. So if I'm asked to go across the street and pick up something for the office and I get hit by a car, I'm going to get workers' compensation automatically because I'm on a work errand. Now, if I want to sue the driver that hit me, I've got to prove that it was their fault. Maybe I was staring at my phone, as I'm occasionally do, and stepped out in front of a car. So fault has to be proven in a personal injury claim. And also, there's no immediate provision of benefits. So in a personal injury case, you slip and fall at a grocery store, get in a car accident, the insurance company doesn't have to pay anything until the case is settled or until a jury brings back a verdict in favor of the plaintiff. And in the personal injury world, they're going to look at comparative fault. All right, the driver was partly at fault for hitting you, but you were also at fault because you weren't paying attention. And that might lessen the award that the person gets. If a jury says, yeah, it's 50-50, you're each half responsible, then they're going to get half of their damages paid for. We don't have that in workers' compensation. If you're injured at work, again, doesn't matter whose fault it is, you get the full package of benefits. But the benefits are cheaper in workers' compensation. You get more money in a personal injury case typically, but you wait a long time, and it's possible your claim could be denied because it's your own fault or it's nobody's fault. Whereas workers' compensation, the benefits are a little more miserly, but it's more likely we're going to get the claim accepted as industrial pretty quickly and get benefits flowing immediately.
Now, that was my first question. I want to give you a couple specific examples and instances where maybe more than one of these different paradigms applies. My first example was my job at a newspaper regularly takes me to pick up documents from advertisers and the like, and I get in a car accident on the way or struck by a car, which law governs? And it sounds from what you're saying like I may have a personal injury claim against the driver that hit, separate and apart from the workers' comp claim against my employer.
Absolutely. You can pursue both. So we call those third-party claims. And that can be the car accident. It could be an outside construction outfit is doing work in the office and they leave some tools laying around and someone trips over them. That worker is entitled to workers' compensation benefits, but they also can file a personal injury lawsuit against the third party. So someone other than their employer and coworkers, they can file a lawsuit against the third party and get benefits that way as well. Now, we don't always do it because workers don't get duplicate benefits. So money that's received in one system serves as a credit. And this is speaking very generally. There's exceptions and there's formulas. But generally, a dollar received in one system serves as a credit in the other system. So then we look to see, well, is it worth doing both? Because maybe there's, you know, if someone's only off work for a few weeks, all their medical bills have been paid by workers' compensation, they've gotten a little permanent disability award, there probably isn't enough money to pursue in the personal injury world. But if someone has a catastrophic injury and there's a third party involved, oftentimes the reward, they can get that immediate treatment through workers' compensation. The workers' compensation claim helps the PI attorney because they've got all the medicals and everything they need to go pursue that third-party case. And in a very serious injury where someone's lost several years of wages, like we don't have future wage loss in workers' compensation, but you get that in the personal injury world. And that's typically where the bigger settlements come from, is this person's lost the ability to do their $80-an-hour union job. So, yeah, you can pursue both.
So if I work for an employer, I'm loading trucks that are sent through a trucking company. Truck driver perhaps backs up too far and puts me between.
Do you know how many of those I've handled, Jeff? That exact scenario. They're on the loading dock at the grocery store. They're waiting, and the driver just backs up a few inches too far and one to crush my client's knee.
Or pulls away too soon.
Or pulls away too soon
and leaves you with a 10-foot fall, and gosh, worse yet, maybe a 10-foot fall with a forklift on top of you.
Right. So I have a group of personal injury attorneys that I work with. And so when someone comes to see me, that's one of the questions I ask them is, how did you get hurt? Now, if it's strictly a work event, lifting a box of paper at work or something, I'm not too concerned about it because, again, it's a no-fault system. But I'll ask them, well, was anybody else involved? And if I can identify a third party, like my client that I'm representing now, I've had dozens and dozens of them over the years. It's the exact scenario you're talking about. He's on the loading dock. They backed the truck up, banged his knee pretty badly. He's required two surgeries. He's been getting his workers' compensation benefits all along, and he just settled his suit against the trucking company. Now, the money he got from the trucking company lawsuit will serve as a credit sometimes against future workers' comp benefits. So sometimes that ends the workers' compensation claim. But if the personal injury settlement is big enough, it's often a good trade-off. I'll tell them, take that $200,000 settlement in the personal injury claim and let your workers' compensation claim go.
And similarly, if the personal injury is small, it's not going to last very long, you may want the certainty of getting the benefits up front, getting your treatment right away, and
not wait
to settle a big case.
You absolutely want to get the workers' compensation benefits. And the really ethical attorneys, and they're out there, who do personal injury work. There's some that are not. So I think that someone who has that kind of injury should go to the workers' compensation attorney first and then say, who do you recommend to do the personal injury? Because you and I discussed a mutual friend that maybe we'll have on the show someday. He will tell his clients, go get all the money you can out of workers' comp. It's entirely tax-free. And over in workers' comp, Rob's only going to charge you a 15% fee. And if he gets you a bunch of money, I might get you a little less in the personal injury side, but I charge a 40% fee. So I'd rather see you get some money over in Rob's system where the fee's only 15%. I'll get a little bit less, but you'll be paying a higher fee. And that's an ethical attorney who will do that. And I have my favorites. Every workers' compensation attorney has their favorite personal injury attorneys that they work with. And we talk to each other. And we don't do anything without contacting the other one to make sure we're not messing up each other's claims. Or, I mean, and one can go to the personal injury attorney first. I get referrals from personal injury attorneys who say, hey, I don't want to mess up the workers' compensation claim, so I told them to come and see you, Rob, and let you handle the workers' compensation side, and I'll handle the personal injury side. And again, we'll work together. I could go into boring detail here, but we also save that person some money because in the personal injury world, that lawyer's got to pay for a doctor to write a report, pay to get medical reports. I can get all that for free in workers' compensation and then just hand it over to the personal injury attorney, and that keeps the cost down in the personal injury case, puts more money in the injured worker's pocket.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to ask you, and I think we should do a future show that walks us through a claim and what we do. We don't really have time for that in 2 minutes, but maybe you could tell me, I get injured at my job. What is the very first thing I should do?
Couple things, and I can keep this real short. Call a workers' comp. First of all, report the claim immediately. See a doctor immediately. even if you don't think it's going to be a serious injury, get it recorded, get it on in writing that you've had an injury with your employer and with a doctor. And second, we talked about these evaluating doctors. We call them qualified medical examiners. Never, ever, ever pick a qualified medical examiner without talking to a workers' compensation attorney first, because that doctor will trail you throughout your claim. And
you want to make sure you don't. You want to
make sure you get the right one.
Yeah.
You got to get the right one. There's some, and you can't trust Google and Yelp, because there's doctors out there that get great Yelp reviews, and I know they're terrible at workers' compensation. And there's other doctors that maybe their Yelp reviews aren't so good, but I know they're excellent at workers' compensation. You got to talk to someone who knows these doctors and knows whether they actually understand the workers' compensation world and that they're worker friendly. There are some doctors out there that are very conservative, and there's some that are more liberal.
And frankly, we all know there are professionals who pay for reviews.
Exactly.
So, but lawyers would never do that.
No. But call the lawyer if they want you to see a QME. If that's the one thing that the listeners can take away tonight, I'll be happy.
And if you call a lawyer, it doesn't cost you anything.
No, it doesn't cost a cent. And if for some reason you find the rare workers' compensation attorney says, I just don't have time to talk to you, call another one. Call a certified specialist. We have plenty in the Bay Area that are good and will take the time and explain the system to you. And again, under no obligation to hire.
If you have about 30 seconds left, do you have any last comments you wanted to throw in?
Oh, boy, that was kind of my last comment. But what I'd like to do is I would like to come back and talk about some of these issues, because we get a lot of confusion about, you know, what happens if I'm totally disabled and can't work at all.
Probably not a good thing.
Special, but the benefits can increase greatly. If someone is determined completely unable to work, there are significantly greater benefits we can get for them. And there's also a state program that we don't have time to go into tonight, but they can look at a person's non-industrial medical conditions and their work injury, and if the combination of them renders them unable to work, the state of California kicks in benefits that can be quite substantial. So anyone that has an injury that severe, and we're seeing it now with long COVID and other conditions, they should definitely consult an attorney, because there are other benefits out there that we can direct them to and get for them.
And that'll be the last word on the subject. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM San Francisco. Tonight we've been discussing workers' compensation law. Our guest tonight has been, with offices in San Francisco and San Rafael, workers' compensation attorney and a great friend of this broadcast, Rob Wyman, a certified specialist in the area of workers' compensation law, practicing for over 30 years. Please be sure to join Your Legal Rights again next week, Wednesday at 6, where, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Rob Wyman, and a big thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, be safe, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.